It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.
Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com. Probably the best download decision you'll ever make.
Hello there. And this month's book is A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking by T. Kingfisher. A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking is a fantasy novel by T. Kingfisher, the author Ursula Vernon. Set in one of a number of semi-autonomous city-states, it is narrated by Mona, a 14-year-old girl who is both a baker and a minor wizard. Mona has a comfortable life working at her aunt's bakery, where she makes the best sweet rolls in the city, helps bread to rise, and occasionally magics the gingerbread men to life. Then early one morning, she opens the door to find a dead girl on the floor, and her life is changed forever. Accused by Inquisitor Oberon of the murder, she is released by the town's ruler, but the killer, a magical assassin known as the Spring Green Man, returns for her several days later.
It was probably stupid of me in a morning full of stupidities, but I kept worrying about whether Bob had survived. On the run from my life and fretting over a sourdough starter, it could only happen to me. I realised that a lot of people wouldn't even consider Bob to be alive as such, but I'd grown attached to that blob. We ran for at least three blocks, and I couldn't keep it up. Slow down! Wait! Please! There was a stitch in my side so painful I wondered if I hadn't been stabbed after all. Spindle twisted his head round, looking annoyed. What? Already? Please? He slows to a fast walk. Gonna get us killed. I shook my head, clutching at my side. Did it matter if we ran? The Spring Green Man had said he could smell my magic. Did that mean he could track me like some kind of evil bloodhound? I managed to glance around this time before we plunged into yet another alleyway. We were off Rat's Elbow and going in deeper. I didn't even protest. While somebody in there might decide to kill me, somebody out here had already tried. It was scary in the rat's nest, though. The buildings weren't just run down, they were falling apart. Some of them were burned out, and some of them had collapsed completely. Even the ones that were just piles of rubble showed signs of life, though. There was a clothesline running from a hole in a pile of rock to a pillar. Somebody was actually living in the rubble. There was a dead dog in the middle of the street. It was only barely light enough to see it, and I might have missed it, but Spindle detoured around it. It had been a big dog. It was too much. In a morning that had already been too much, I threw up. After a couple of seconds, I felt somebody pull my hair back. When I looked up, shaky and sweating, it was Spindle. Thanks, I mumbled, wiping at my mouth. He shrugged. I felt a little better, not much. I felt cold, mostly. I hadn't grabbed my jacket on the way out of the bakery, and the wet patch on my pants was freezing. People weren't staring at me here the way they had in the Rat's Elbow. There weren't many people out, but there was a little cluster at the mouth of every alley, and when I looked up, there were people crouched on the edges of the buildings too. They were watching the street, not just us, although we were the biggest and most obvious things on the street at the moment, particularly given the vomiting. But they were watching everything. I realised that there were guards of some sort. No, not guards. They were sentries. These were people who were watching to see what was coming into the rat's nest, and if they saw anything, they would go and alert more people. Given where we were, I didn't want to know what those other people would look like or what kind of weapons they might be carrying.
Someone is trying to kill all the magicians in the city. The guard and Inquisitor Oberon seem to be involved, and Mona goes on the run. Joined by Spindle, the dead girl's brother, they uncover a plot to destroy the city by the Carex, a predatory band of asset-stripping mercenaries. Mona is helped in her quest by Knackering Molly, so named as she can make dead horses walk, a valuable gift, as hauling a dead horse away to the knacker's yard is an expensive business. This is a crossover book, suitable for both adults and young adults. But like a lot of Kingfisher's work, it has enough colour, detail and imagination to appeal to this wide audience. A nice element is that many of the magicians, known as magickers, are limited to one type of spell. Mona, for example, can only influence bread, yeast, and other baked goods, though even this proves to be a useful skill in a fight. Kingfisher's imaginative twists on familiar themes help to make the novel both entertaining and in places quite captivating. Combining fantasy and horror elements, she does not flinch from the darker side of magical life either, and her characters are rounded and well-written, allowing the reader to empathise with them.
In that supremely awkward moment, Spindle came to the rescue. "Right," he said, apparently unfazed by the fact that the ruler of our entire city was weeping in front of us. "If I grab this arm and you grab that arm, Mum, I think we can get her out." The Duchess, to her credit, put down her book, gave a quick, hitching sob, and grabbed my left arm. They hauled. I popped out of the toilet with long red scrapes across both hips and tumbled headfirst onto the carpet. The gingerbread man dove out of the way. The carpet probably came off the worst in the encounter. "Oh dear," the Duchess found a towel and draped it over my shoulders. It was the softest towel I had ever encountered, thick and fluffy, and it seemed criminal to use it to scrub stuff off my skin, but I did anyway. Hopefully they could launder it or something. "Thank you, Your Grace." I tried to arrange the towel over my legs. Standing in front of the ruler of the city was one thing. Standing in front of her in your underwear was something else again. Although, in truth, she didn't look much like a ruler right now. She looked smaller than she did in the parades and when I'd seen her at court. Smaller and older and a good deal more tired. When she walked, there was a faint hint of a shuffle, as if one of her knees pained her. There were dark purple half-moons under her eyes, and her brief tears had made her nose red and shiny. It was strange to think of the Duchess as old. She'd been middle-aged practically forever. I guess she must have been young once, but when you put Duchess in front of somebody's name, they become sort of permanently middle-aged, and she'd seemed, oh, not unkind, maybe, but stern, when I'd seen her before. Competent. Not like somebody who'd be crying in her bedroom and not knowing what to do. "Are the guards going to come in?" I asked. I was hoping for more than a towel if they did. Soap and water before they arrested me, maybe. "No," the Duchess said firmly, dabbing at her eyes with the edge of her sleeve. "No, the guards are loyal to me at least, and will not act without my orders. I wish I knew who else was. We are, Your Grace." Spindle, never a staunch royalist, scuffed his foot on the carpet and muttered something. "Thank you, children," said the Duchess, "although I cannot think how I came to fall so far that my supporters must climb up the garderobe to pledge their loyalty." She took my towel absently and tossed it into a hamper. I tried to pull my shirt down over my legs, but she picked up a lap robe and handed it to me. "It'll get all dirty, Your Grace," I said, looking at the fine embroidery. "Then it will get dirty," she said firmly. "We have bigger things to worry about." "Could I?" I looked longingly towards the bathroom. I stank. I didn't want to ruin the lap robe, but I also didn't want to smell like a garderobe. "It'll only take a minute." "Yes, of course." I pulled Spindle in with me and made him wash. He muttered, "This soap smells like roses. Yes, isn't it nice?" "No." I would have made him wash behind his ears, but we didn't have all night. I was half afraid that when we emerged, the Duchess would have called in armed men to deal with her visitors, but she was still sitting there, picking at a loose thread on the arm of the chair. She smiled a little when she saw us, but there was a lot of sadness underneath it.
Kingfisher studied art and anthropology at university and began work as a freelance illustrator. Her early works include the webcomic series Digger, that won a Hugo Award in 2012. She has added two more Hugos for short stories, along with two Nebulas and a host of other awards. A Wizard's Guide is one of her most successful novels, garnering the Dragon Award for Young Adult Novel in 2021, along with The Locus, The Lodestar, and the Mythopoeic Award. I did have one little gripe. I finished reading it and could not see how the title fitted. There was no mention of banking anywhere in the book. Then I looked at the cover again. Ah, the joys of dyslexia. I had never come across Kingfisher's work before, but I enjoyed this book very much indeed. It is imaginative, original, exciting, and well-paced. I will certainly be exploring more of her work in the future, and I must thank Jessica for nominating this wonderful novel for review. I can recommend it wholeheartedly, both as a young adult and an adult read.
Okay, we need to find out now what our ace sports correspondent and Borough Fan extraordinaire makes of A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking by, of course, T. Kingfisher. I just like saying the name T. Kingfisher.
Yeah.
Rob, your thoughts?
Oh, it's an enjoyable read. A nice, yeah, it was a good story. It's funny, actually, you mentioned the name, because I was quite struck reading at the back that she changed the name for the book because she normally writes for children or young adults. And this is not perceived as a book for young adults. As far as the American audience, it's a book for adults. And I would say for a very big difference in Britain, I think you would definitely classify it as a book for young adults myself.
As Jenny said in her review, it's a crossover book, basically. It's, I suppose, tapping into the rolling market and other sort of areas with respect to, or arguably even further back, maybe the market of the likes of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, effectively, who obviously had a lot of adult fans as well from that perspective. So, I mean, from the opening start, which I do think is a cracker, from the murder in the bakery and the character of Mona, who, and actually I think it was cleverly done because we don't actually realise what gender Mona is until some pages in, effectively, because I initially seen the lead character as being a young male, which is obviously a little twist to kind of address that. And it was just, I just thought, nicely done. Anyway, what did you make of the whole thing?
Oh, I liked it. It was a good read. It was good, and I wouldn't have thought it wouldn't have been something that would have I would have expected to read, to be honest. And as you said, it's the start. There's a body on the floor immediately, and so it's a dramatic start. But yeah, we quickly find out that we're not in this world, and that, but there are some parallels. But we've kind of, like, if there's any sort of parallel, we're in a much earlier century, shall we say?
I was kind of getting vibes of sort of Discworld, as in Terry Pratchett, aspects related to that, and also maybe 18th century York, 18th to 19th century York, that kind of area environment where, you know, you've got cobblestones and sharp alleyways and areas that you effectively sort of motor on with a kind of castle that's actually around in the location as well. So maybe a synthesis of York, Lincoln and Durham, perhaps.
Yeah, but you've got sort of technology, which is quite low technology. And but you've got this double world that the people, that there's the magic people and they're kind of, and that's a very interesting point. What she's investigating there is that you're getting prejudice, you're getting people being victimized for what they are. And it's interesting because these people are also the most useful asset in the war that's being fought. They're the people that sought after to help them in their war, but they're the enemy at home, and they're kind of, they're being eliminated, and vilified as time goes on, and so that I think that's very interesting. That's getting across a really good point there, and we see how I think it's interesting, as you say, she's a young girl and she feels very, very hard done to. She thinks that by the fact that she feels very let down by adults. She's a reluctant heroine, and partly because she doesn't feel that she should be, because she's a young girl. She shouldn't be thrust into that situation. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, she steps up to the plate. I mean, from the initial shock of discovering the dead body to then apparently going through the normal protocols as she perceived it, of obviously reporting it, then, of course, being arrested, being summarily moved up to obviously the upper echelons of society, where thankfully the Duchess effectively takes pity on her and effectively puts her back into society as well. But obviously, there is, it does kind of show you some of the challenges of envy, the challenges of people who clearly have an agenda and they wish to pursue that agenda, come what may, basically. I mean, I'm always tempted to say Suella Braverman, but I better not, because that would be taint me with the Gary Lineker brush.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, there'll be people brewing at the walls of Southern Broadcasting or whatever, but for saying something like that. Yeah, Southside, sorry. Yeah,
Well.
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought one of the most effectively described parts was where effectively she goes up with her her sort of streetwise friend,
Yeah.
and the only entry is actually going up through the toilet. I thought that was fantastic, really, in all sorts of ways. But I think that was very well described, and you could almost see the scenario. And of course, the way in which she's emerging, half stuck, halfway out of
Yeah.
the toilet. I mean, I could see that being visually a very effective image.
Yes, that'll be good in the film version, won't it, to see how they go through that. And that's probably the point that ruled it out from being a young adult book in America, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't so much toilet humor as discussions with respect to obviously the private ablutions and so on. Favorite characters, Rob?
Well, I think you've, as you've already said, that the central character is she's such a rounded individual, and she's, as I said earlier, she's reluctantly forced into being a hero, but she doesn't feel she should be a hero. But she learns so much and she develops so much through it. And you have to really sort of admire her and admire her fortitude. And as you said, the street urchin lad who just gets on with things, doesn't he? He just matter of factly, he knows how to win his battles, and just does it. He and he's not he shows no fear in that, and shows no fear of also mixing with a duchess and people like that.
I think an honourable
They must
mention
mix in
for
his level.
yeah,
Yeah.
an honourable mention for Aunt Tabitha, which I thought was
Yeah.
great. If pushed, though, although I'd also give a solid mention to Knackering Molly, because I just think the actual name itself for Knackering Molly
Yeah, I know.
was wondrous, really. And she does go on to play a key role in the narrative, which I can't say anything about, but it is a key role that she actually develops. And actually, yeah, I think quite a heartrending role as well. But for me, of course, I'm going to go for the gingerbread man, purely and simply because he just kept on going, relentlessly,
Yes. It's not often that you get to highlight a gingerbread man.
No, I mean, there was, I believe, a gingerbread man character that was featured in Shrek, and I'm not sure whether the author actually got the idea
All right.
from that side of things there. But it was also, I think, something which is the first time I've ever actually had a narrative which, as the magical power, is the ability to animate dough. And of course, sourdough, the psychotic yeast-bearing person of the thing, again, quite an interesting character in terms of how that meanness comes across from that point of view. So extraordinary.
That was really interesting, wasn't it? That the people's magic powers went in all sorts of really strange directions, some quite mundane. You mentioned Knackering, what was the sorry, Knackering, I've
Molly,
forgotten,
Knackering Molly.
Knackering Molly, yeah, and a ability to raise dead horses
Reanimate horses,
from,
exactly.
yeah, really imaginative to think of these different things, really.
Okay, so have you given us a favorite character? I mean, which one would
Yeah,
you say would be the one?
I did. I said the central character,
So it is Mona. You you're sticking
Mona,
with Mona. Yep,
the baker girl.
excellent.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the score. What are you going to offer as far as the Rob Nichols score is for concerned, as far as A Wizard's Guide to defensive baking. I mean, the title itself is really interesting. It's
it is.
Not a wizard's guide to kung fu baking or martial arts baking or indeed war baking. It's defensive baking. So maybe attack is not necessarily the best form of defense, although there is, I mean, the final, and I can only say epic scene of those giant gingerbread men effectively sort of basically going up against the invading hordes. I thought, again, was very cinematic in tone and very cinematic in description, really. I can see the likes of Peter Jackson doing an updated equivalent of Lord of the Rings from that point of view.
Yeah, to make it believable. It was very different. It was very unusual. And it is somebody with an amazing imagination. It would be nice to have a conversation with him, I think.
Yeah. Well, of course, based in North Carolina, and even though Jessica didn't realise that apparently at the time, I think I'll echo Jenny's thanks to Jessica for actually recommending this to us, because it was an author I was not familiar with in terms of the title. In fact, it was well, I had to sort of ask her to repeat it several times, really, in terms of T. Kingfisher, because it's great. But anyway, so what's your score then, Rob, for A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking?
I'm going for 8 out of 10.
Well, there we are. We've heard the thoughts of Rob Nichols. Interesting from that perspective. And I think a solid 8 as far as Rob is concerned. Doing things slightly differently in this edition of Book of the Month, because for a variety of reasons, some technological, we're kind of doing our contributors in sequential order. So having listened to, obviously, Jenny's review of the text and so on, Jenny Finch now back with us to, again, give another little reflection on the whole system. I did appreciate the dyslexia line. I thought that was very amusing, actually. So very good. Presumably, you know, A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Banking could well be a sequel that T. Kingfisher might want to put in mind.
I think so. I'll look forward to reading it. I'd pay money for that.
One of the things that, again, like yourself, I was most impressed with was the way in which the dialogue is so easily developed and produced. I mean, just reading it, and I obviously was channeling my inner gender neutralness to actually deliver the readings that we had in Betwixt Times. But the actual interlinking thing, I mean, it was, I hesitate to use the term cinematic, but I would have thought that to translate from the page to the stage would actually involve very little effort, because there's an awful lot of dynamism between the main characters, especially Mona and her assistant, Soul, who kind of engages with all sorts of things, and the Duchess and Knackering Molly and all of those things. There seems to be the chemistry, quite literally, seems to spring off the page.
Absolutely. And it's wonderful the way she starts pretty well alone, apart from Bob, maybe, and then gradually builds a sort of little group of people around her. And you don't realise what is happening and the roles they all have to play until you get towards the end. It's beautifully paced and it's beautifully built. And the dialogue's part of that. The dialogue gives them, to a certain extent, some of their character and illustrates them very well. It's extremely skillful writing.
Yeah, I mean, and duly award-winning, quite rightly so. Said again, when we're speaking to Rob, for obvious reasons and spoilers, I'm not going to talk about the full journey of discovery of Knackering Molly, but I did feel that her input was quite fascinating. And also this take on what I felt actually had echoes of Discworld mixed with a kind of 18th, 19th century Durham, Lincoln, York environment in terms of the place itself, really.
Yes, the idea of the city-states I found quite fascinating. I did a lot of ancient history when I was doing one of my degrees, and I was always fascinated by the idea of the city-states that were so close and so similar and yet so different, and yet faced the same enemy, which these city-states do as well. It's a wonderful melange of different things with its own individual twists. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I could certainly see room for loads of sequels. There could be a whole Tea Kingfisher verse developed here. Maybe she wants to go down that route, maybe not. We obviously time will tell. But in terms of the characters, I've already again gone on record as saying that I felt the Gingerbread Man was spot on insofar as he, using nonverbal communication, managed to actually develop the emotions of loyalty, commitment, bravery, and affection. Very impressively. So I'm standing by the small Gingerbread Man. The giant ones, difficult, although again, honourable mentions for the psychotic Sourdough Bob, who again actually carried with them. I kind of kept getting flashbacks to the shape-shifting character of Odo, the changeling in Deep Space Nine, when it came to Bob, without the ability to obviously take on board any manifestations of human form, etc., just becoming bits of, quite literally, very sour dough.
It was a toss-up between Sourdough Bob and Knackering Molly as my favourite character, to be honest. I thought Bob hissing at the uncle, I thought, was just a lovely touch. And the rats, of course. And they decided not to tell anybody about the rats. I thought that was, that's the way things work.
Certainly the Duchess, I think, came across very well. I could almost see echoes of the late Queen Elizabeth II in terms of she seems a lot smaller in real terms than I'd been expecting. And the ruler, and especially, again, we spoke about this with Rob and we used an excerpt from the reading from it, the emergence of the two main characters, or at least Mona and her friend, out of the garderine, the toilet, basically, which I thought was a wonderfully imaginative way of actually getting an entrance into a castle.
Oh yes, that was it sounded almost as if she'd experienced something like that. You know, somebody's been to far too many medieval castles, I think, rather like I have.
Yeah, interesting. So your favourite character, you're sticking basically with the. In fact, do you have we said your favourite character would be?
Almost up to the end, it was Sourdough Bob, and then at the end, I think it was Knackering Molly.
Yeah, I thought you might go down the Knackering Molly line. I had a feeling that if I was laying away, just interesting for that. Okay, Jenny. In terms of the overall line, then, what are you going to score this in its usual quantum state?
I thought it was remarkable, and I didn't expect to enjoy it anywhere near as much as I did. I'm going to give it a 9.5.
Well, I think I'm sitting on a 9 at present. Rob had an 8. Be intriguing if we do manage to get Jessica Burtis online. Obviously, as a fellow Carolean from North Carolina, as the author, be interested to see where she actually sort of pitches it. But that may well be revealed very shortly. For now, Jenny Finch, keep on keeping on. Do you want to tease ahead to the next book of the month?
I think soon. I'll let you announce it as soon as I've decided.
And that's what you call teasing ahead to the next book of the month. Okay, so we've heard Rob Nichols' view. We've heard Jenny Finch's view on this. And again, Jenny's heartfelt thanks passed on, which you'll have heard earlier in the production, Jessica, to yourself for this Tea Kingfisher classic. Nothing to do with the fact that you were supporting your fellow North Carolina writers, basically.
I had no idea. I need to look more into authors when I start to read the book, because I was shocked when you said that. But the world works in mysterious ways. It was meant to be.
Mm-hmm. So having worked through the whole process, what did you make of the final piece in itself? And what kind of resonated with you with respect to A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking?
Well, I think part of why I like this book so much is that I mean, magic and wizardry was something that I loved as a kid a ton. I feel like a lot of kids grew up with Harry Potter, and it was something that was just the magical, fantastical, something greater than life. Wizards who were able to conjure all these spells was so interesting to me. And then in this, where all of that wizardry is around bread, I think that that's such a funny reversal of the usual all-powerful wizard we have in a lot of texts. And the wizard is a 14-year-old girl, which is also such a like out there concept. It's not just like a Bildungsroman where she grows and becomes a powerful wizard. It's like she becomes that in this age. And I think that that's also very curious. And T. Kingfisher or Ursula is like also a horror writer, and just those all the it, none of it makes sense in the abstract, and I love that. It's so eclectic and it sounds so random. I like that it's kind of like baking in itself, where it takes all of these ingredients that don't seem to make sense, and then it just comes into this amazing story. I think it's lovely. It's so whimsical and dark.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right from the off, when obviously the body is discovered, I feel that Kingfisher manages to capture the nuances of the experiences of Mona as somebody who is clearly out of her depth, but manages to find her system quite regularly, despite the villains of the piece and all the other elements within that, that still manages to come good, and obviously manages through Sourdough Bob, through Knackering Molly, through all of the other areas to kind of produce this sort of success from that point of view. And no spoilers of that. So, favorite characters then?
Bob is so scary, but I love Bob. It's just the whole like familiar concept. As a kid, I was like, oh, like what would, I just imagine like if I was the magical character, like familiar would be like a crow, like this elegant bird. Now I'm like, oh no, sourdough. A sourdough starter is clearly the best winner here.
Sourdough Bob. I'm still standing by my choice of the gingerbread man, the small
That is
gingerbread
fair.
man, because I think he sort of manages to sort of work through the whole process. And inevitably then your score out of 10 for T. Kingfisher's A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking.
I'm giving this series a 9 only because I wish it had more. That's like my issue, is I wish the story had more. Even though I feel like it's I like just the book as it is. I just wish that we had like a lot more of Mona's story. But I think concept wise, it's a 10, of course. Like it makes no sense, but it makes sense when you read it.
And we can actually reveal now that the title of the next book of the month will be Jenna Warren's The Moon and Stars. It's her first novel, so there we are, The Moon and Stars by Jenna Warren.